The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Oh, how's that volume for you all? Clearly, you don't need the volume, but the computer needs the volume. So we'll bear with it. So I want to... I'm going to be here again in 2 months, so I'm doing a bit of a series with these two visits that I have. It might be familiar to some of you. It's a practice concept that I use a lot, and it's really beginning with looking at our mind as an internal landscape, looking at it as a garden, so to speak. Inside a garden, flowers bloom, weeds grow. There are places where it feels like the light is shining and there's clarity, and there's places that feel quite dark and shadowed and unseen. And our inner experience is very much like this as well. And so tonight I want to talk about some of the things that can show up in the mind that are aspects of the landscape, that are parts of the garden. And you might connect with it and feel your own resonance. Oh yeah, I've got that growing in my garden as well. Or it might just be something that gives you an opportunity to look and see what is there, what is growing in this kind of internal landscape that you have, that we all have. So the lovely part of the garden, and in regards to children, are these beautiful flowers that bloom, or these the blossoms that are on the trees now here, and those sweet moments, those connections, those feelings of warmth and closeness between you and yourself, between you and your child, between you and your partner, between you and your experience. Is a big part of what mindfulness is inviting us to do, is really feel a warmth and connection to our experience. And that's this invitation to live our life. That's the invitation to show up for the moments that we have. So it's interesting, I find it interesting, that sometimes these sweet moments in some subtle way actually cause us to turn away. Sometimes it can be so delicious, it's almost like you can't take it in. That happens sometimes with children. With my own daughter today, she was in the school play, and I was so happy for her and proud of her. I had to like make fists so I wouldn't cry and embarrass her, but also just because it was so big, I couldn't hold it just for that second. And then I took a couple of breaths, and I was there, and I was just saying to myself, just take this in. You know, just love it, because this is such a wonderful moment. But that really is as a result of my practice. I know years ago, I bypassed many wonderful moments, unseen, unknown, and really unlived. And it's interesting because we often think, well, I'm holding out for the good ones. But sometimes when we stop and pay attention, there's this knowing or seeing, wow, I am holding out for the good ones, and yet I seem to step over them sometimes without realizing or without meaning to. So this connects to neuroscience and these kind of amazing discoveries that are being made about the mind right now and the brain, which is that we human beings seem to have what's called a negative bias. Evolutionarily, we needed to look out for danger in order to survive living outside in caves when we were cave people. And so our brains are really wired and really predisposed to look for what's wrong and to kind of miss what's right. So as we, you know, exited our cave in the morning and we heard a beautiful bird song, we taught ourselves to kind of ignore it and forget thinking about it so that we could focus on the possibility that a lion was going to be coming and eating us or trying to eat us sometime soon. And it's kind of odd to think about, but the ancestors that kind of stopped and just took in the bird were probably breakfast, you know. So it's like, okay, we are the descendants of the ones who fixated on what was wrong or what danger was possibly out there. And I just love remembering that because it makes it impersonal. It's just, oh my gosh, it's not just my brain, this is just the brain, this is just the evolution of a brain. We all have, to some degree, some greater, some lesser, a negative bias. And that causes us to skip over, sometimes really directly miss, those beautiful, sweet moments that come, those flowers, those blossoms, and sometimes to step over them out of habit. Or even like I described, it's just too much. It's so wonderful, it's just like I can't breathe for a second. So when we are employing mindfulness, we can see these aspects of the landscape. And when we have the consciousness about them, we have the capacity to change them. The first invitation in mindfulness practice is always witnessing and seeing. First we have to see, and then we can possibly rewire the mind, is what neuroscience is inviting us to do, or even just change the mental habit. As the Buddha was saying, we can all do this, change the mental habit. So I want to invite you for a minute to reflect on some flowers, some blossoms that are in your own landscape, in your own life right now. Maybe even one or two that you stepped over, or one or two that you really kind of soaked up. You let them move in you. And it's nice to feel it in the body. As that poem I read a few moments ago said, your history is here inside your body. Your memories about the sweet moments are also here in your body. They can be accessed and felt in this physical place. And what we know about this physical experience of joy, again from the perspective of neuroscience, is that if we are able to pause and feel the joy for 10 deep breaths or a minute, it literally changes the way our neurons function about that joy. We remember it and are able to access it again in a different way than if we just kind of do what is our habitual mind state, which is like, oh, joy, okay, and then we move on. The access to it is much less available than if we do this exercise, this kind of mindful embodiment of joy where we pause, breathe it in, feel it, take it in. And then there's a pathway literally carved in the mind that lets us drive, if you will, to that destination again. So that's always my inspiration, to take a second, even if the phone is ringing or there are dinging emails coming in. Pause, take in the sweet moment, feel it in my whole body, and try to imagine neurological pathways being built. So the next aspect of the garden that's important to look at and try to unpack for ourselves as much as we can, again with the intention that the more consciousness we bring to this, the more helpful it is, are really these weeds, these dark places, these shadows that are in everyone's internal landscape, everyone's garden. And what I want to talk about with that are three very well-known mind traps that are easy for all of us to fall into, that are kind of weeds in the garden. So I'll list them, and then I'll describe them, and then I'll tell you a little story about them. So the first of the mind traps is negative thinking. We just move into what's wrong here. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with this? Again, these are mind traps because they're places that it's very easy for the brain to go and very easy for the brain to stay. And so we just kind of, oh, yeah, I've got that destination in my mind and I'm familiar with it. It sounds like this. It happens when my child won't put their socks on, or it shows up when my colleague at work doesn't give me the brief on time, or it's the conversation I have with my partner as soon as they walk in the door at night. Yep, I got it. That's mine. So this disposition to fall into this isn't right, it can't be like this, I don't want this, it's not supposed to, something's wrong here. It's this negative thinking, this perspective of fault. The second is catastrophizing, the way that we can so quickly move to worst case scenario and believe that it's all really going downhill fast and furiously. And that can happen when, you know, your child has a tantrum and it's like, it's always going to be like this. Or, you know, the partner forgets the thing that they always forget, and the mind is like, we're never going to be able to buy a house because my partner always forgets this thing that, you know, whatever it is. Or the personal shortcoming that you harp on yourself about, that's like, this is going to turn into my greatest failure. This shortcoming that I have is going to turn into my greatest downfall. So this capacity that we have to move to catastrophe, worst case scenario, again, this is a mechanism that protects us and keeps us safe. And yet when we overemploy it, it makes us miserable. That's really kind of the very blunt way of saying it. We all need to understand when we're driving in traffic in the rain, if I drive too fast, I could crash and that would be terrible. But how often do we run through these scenarios when they're not actually helping or when they're very, very unlikely? And the third is this very difficult inner experience of inner criticism. It's just this voice that's on our back, that's making us wrong, that's bringing us fault, that's blaming, ridiculing, belittling, demeaning us. And sometimes the inner critic takes a little clever turn and ridicules and demeans and belittles the other. So it's also outer critic, but we are served by first looking at it as a function of inner critic and just kind of understanding how often this shows up, how easy it is for me to undermine my own good intentions and second guess and doubt and belittle my own efforts. I was driving behind a truck on my way here, and the bumper sticker said, "Cut self slack." It was just so great. Really big on the bumper, all caps, "Cut self slack." And I just loved that. That's it. I thought, I just need to put that like on my forehead, look in the mirror often or something. Just cut self slack. So these three mind traps, again, are very, very common, easy destinations for all of us. And some of us might recognize one as being a kind of more familiar piece of the landscape, or maybe all three. I was talking to a yogi that I work with around her mindfulness practice, and she was describing to me some reflections she's having about this decision that she made with her business. She runs a small business, and she began describing to me how she feels like it was the wrong decision, and she feels a lot of regret and remorse about it, and just a real sense of doubt about why she let this decision kind of move through and why she didn't stop it. And a lot of, if only I had said the things I was thinking about it not really being the right choice. And then she started to describe this fear that the business is going to fail, and that really this is kind of the beginning of bankruptcy for her, and that she felt like if she had just stood up and shared her opinion, she wouldn't be in this position where she feels like her business might fail. And then she started to describe this sense of really feeling disappointed in herself and really kind of not feeling proud of what she had done in that circumstance. And I was talking with her and I described these mind traps, and I have to say I was very touched by her bravery, because she just heard me and then she paused and said, "Yeah, I did all three." And she was just able to recognize, you know, first she was criticizing the situation. Then she was catastrophizing. So first she was saying, this is the wrong choice. I didn't want this to happen. Then she was saying, my business is probably going to fail. And then she was saying, I feel really ashamed of what I did. inner critic. And the thing about this is that it's a huge act of bravery to turn our awareness toward it and see it. And yet that's the piece that's going to allow us to get out of the trap. If we don't turn and see it, we stand in the trap and suffer without knowing why we're suffering. If we turn and see it, the first step is to suffer and know why we're suffering. So first, it's called unconscious incompetence. First, we stand there in the trap and we feel miserable and we don't know why. Then we are willing to see it and we're standing in the trap. This is conscious incompetence. Stand there, feel miserable, but know why. And then we move to, oh, I see that I feel miserable and I see that I can move out of the trap. And that is conscious competence. So we move to the ability to actually navigate and draw ourselves in another direction. So while it might seem like turning and looking at these mental states is painful, why would I want to do that? I'll offer you that the motivation is looking at the painful mental state is the process of getting out of the painful mental state. Which brings me to another part of the garden, which are the shadows and the areas where there's just no light. And this is, everyone does this, but this is the denial and this is the repression and this is just the wanting to go to sleep, watch another movie, buy something else online, have another piece of cake, just do something other than look at this. I've done all of those, by the way. I'm a pro. And I've done them without knowing I'm doing them, and I've done them knowing I'm doing them, and I've done them and chosen, I'm not going to do this right now. All of it is part of the landscape. I would be the last person to say that mindfulness is about a self-perfection plan. Not at all, not to me. This is really about a wholeness practice and about embracing our wholeness and living our wholeness. So sometimes I joke, but sometimes I know I need a break. I need a mental break. And I sit down and I fully intend to watch three Netflix series in a row. and I'm like, time well spent. Yeah. And it's like what I am doing. And I am choosing to take that break. And I would never say, you know, hammer away at your consciousness. Never take a break. That's not going to help us. And yet we all know the feeling of I'm on, you know, episode 5 and I'm just like watching and feeling terrible and not really paying attention and not really wanting to watch but not wanting to not watch either. Those are the moments where we realize, okay, it's painful to avoid it. What would it feel like if I turned toward it? So the shadows of the garden really offer us an opportunity to take things at our own pace, right? It's like if you're really in your own outdoor landscape and it's too hot in the sun, you might go stand in the shade for a while and get some reprieve and cool off. But if you stay in the shade for too long, you're going to get cold and you're going to need to go back out to the sun. So this is the, when are you ready to, maybe even warm enough to go into the shadows and have a look and see what's there and attend to what has been denied? And when are you not warm enough and you just need to stay in the sun and stand there and heat up? So mindfulness, I feel like, offers us as gentle a path as we need because we are setting the pace and we are really making the choices for it. And yet it really offers us the strength to move forward when we're ready. So this is the first piece that I wanted to lay out for us, is this idea that we can all become more and more familiar with our landscape, more and more familiar with our flowers and the joy that's there to be received, more and more familiar with these mind traps or these weeds and when we step in them and how we step in them and what tends to happen right before we step in them. And then also with these shadows and what we might be denying or turning away from that really is wanting to be turned toward. And again, just to really underline this point, to navigate our landscape, with great patience, great gentleness, and really knowing that we're doing this for ourselves. So if we, in a sense, it would be like maybe hiring a huge bulldozer and just driving it through our garden. Some kind of mindfulness bulldozer is not going to help the landscape at all. So we need to walk gingerly between the plants without breaking them and not stepping on, you know, something that's really attempting to come to life in us. So if we use mindfulness to bulldoze ourselves, I would say it was a misuse of a beautiful practice. Very easy to do. I've done it to myself too many times. I can't even count. And yet, that's the process of kind of learning how to step between the plants, learning how to step between my experiences and come to understand them. Let me see if there's anything else I want to share for tonight. Okay. So what I want to do from here is guide you into just a few moments of personal inquiry so that you can kind of sense some of this is pretty tender and you might feel like you need to just take it slowly right now to inquire, or sometimes it feels like finally these things are being talked about and I can just feel them. And so wherever you are with that, I really want to encourage you and support you in taking care of yourself. And after this personal inquiry, we're going to break up into groups of three. And you can decide with your partner, if you came with one, whether you want to be in the same group or a different group. Depends on your need for tonight. And then after a short time in groups of three, we'll come back for a group discussion and just have some time to talk about this together. And it's really wide open. You might end up wanting to share in your group of three about your life as a parent and the garden of that. You might want to share about your life as an adult in the world and your life about that, or your partner, or even being a child yourself, whatever feels like it's really rich and here for you right now. So if you would just close your eyes for a minute and take a couple of deep breaths. And just feeling into your own internal landscape right now, your own internal experience. And coming to look, perhaps you're able to see a mind trap that you have been falling into lately. And there's no judgment about it. We've all fallen into these mind traps lately. And maybe you're just able to see one in particular right now. Maybe that's something that it would be fruitful or beneficial for you to inquire about with your group, share about a little bit. Trust me, they have it too. Or maybe you're more drawn to explore this idea of the shadows, what you might be pushing away from or turning away from lately. What is it that might be calling you to look at it when you feel warm enough, ready enough? Or maybe you feel called to look at the flowers, the sweetness that's been there lately, maybe some that you've really soaked in or some that you've stepped over, and you're now becoming aware of that moment that you stepped over it.